Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami.
How difficult it is when the body isn't well to be mindful, because the body has been trained and the mind has not been trained. And I think that's true for our everyday life. We might be really focusing on, we're being mindful even of what we're doing, but we're not noticing the direction we're going. So it's not enough for us just to be mindful of the activity itself, but we have to examine the context in which we're being aware, so that our awareness is inclining towards Nibbana. If it's not inclining towards Nibbana, we can ask ourselves, where am I going? Or why am I doing this? What is the purpose of what I'm doing? And when we're working for an organization or a task which contributes to something that does not lead to cultivation of our spiritual path, our spiritual opening, our awakening, then maybe we have to reconsider how it is we spend our time. And is the task that we're doing noble? And even if there isn't something noble in the particular task, does it contribute to a life that is lived in the spirit of nobility? Nobility, and that includes virtue, developing stillness in the mind and stability, steadiness, evenness, composure, not hating, not greedy, not restless, not distracted, not exhausted, not giving up to the wrong thing or surrendering to what we don't know, but well-aimed, well-established, open, well-directed. We must examine how to shift, how to align ourselves more with the imminent direction. Where is that leading? Is it noble? Is it leading towards Nibbana? Is it leading to being aware, being present, and also being directed to that which is true, purposeful in the aims of awakening the heart, not of dulling our awakening, or not of detracting from it? So the world is a big detraction, but we're in it. The Buddha suggested that we practice right resort. And if we don't have a satipanya, you know, sati by itself can be lame. But if we have satipanya, then we also need to examine our resort. Where are we having this satipanya? If it's in a shopping center, we have to have a lot more satipanya. But if I'm tagging along with somebody or there's some need, practice very, very intentional satipanya, not to allow the mind to wander into a shop window and gaze longingly at things. Because this is what the senses do. The sense faculties will do that if they're not well trained, if they're not composed and centered and focused inwardly. we will always wander out to pleasant objects, pleasant experiences. So that's lifetime or lifetimes of doing that. That's what happens. But as long as the heart is abiding in a good space, it's really important for us to reflect. It helps us to see that just focusing on the objective world isn't it. We have to notice what our direction is. Where are we going? Do we know? Even if we don't know, what is the nature of our going? What is the intention deeply within it? What are we inclining to by being aware of our movements? Where is that awareness taking us? Is it taking us to a store where we can get nice things? Or to a space where we can have some kind of enjoyment of activity that may not lead to nobility? We must pay attention to the context, to the resort. And so it's a contextual sati, mindfulness with wisdom, wise knowing. And then we're trying to bring our awareness to itself. That's really difficult to do when you're in an activity itself, but if it's repetitious, the mind is like a rubber band in a way. It stretches. We can learn to stretch into the area of checking the resort, checking in, redirecting ourselves inwardly so that we can know the state of the mind that is knowing. Come back to that. And that's where the knowing will always bring us if we have trained it and have that direction instilled within us. What is true and what is inwardly healthy, then we have a better chance of being aligned with the Dhamma moment by moment rather than just being aligned with delusion or objective goals. It's a very subtle thing, but it was so good to reflect and see how easy it is for a tired mind to be disabled, not from walking, but from being present, being fully present. So we do have to take care of the body. It's our vessel, our vehicle. And it best transports us when it's naturally, when it's fed just enough so that we can not multitask, but direct inwardly and be present and connected to our environment and our relationship to others. What is the sound of our speech? Is it too loud, too sharp, too pointed, too aggressive? The words might be right, but what is the tone, and where is the heart when the speech is coming? And again, I noticed yesterday, I think it was in the morning, when I was speaking and the words were okay, but the heart was tight. And it kind of surprised me, but this is the power of mindfulness when there isn't enough right resort. The mindfulness can be aware of that and raise the bar. Raise the heart up to ennobled, more ennobled intention. So subtle, the levels of training that we can apply to a single moment of activity, speech, or just putting your feet one by one in front of the body to carry us. In that way, also in more active moments, coming back to not focusing on objects, but always trying to come back to the process of the mind and to the quality of our knowing. And is it directed with wisdom, or is it lost in reactivity, wanting, impatience, or some other quality that is not noble, or can be ennobled a little bit? Maybe there is some self-centeredness. We may not feel well enough. But actually, behind that not feeling well enough is something else. Like a child that pouts when it's told to do something and it doesn't want to do it. So that influences the level of ennobling the moment. So I practice with the pouting mind, the shrugging inner, not feeling like it, mode that sometimes comes, or the overpowering mode, like wanting one's own way. Well, who is this one? There isn't that one. That's just the delusion applying itself and misdirecting the heart from the noblest quality. It's a practice. We are practicing, training, learning, seeing and redirecting and adjusting ourselves. This is like fine-tuning. The monastery is a place of refined attunement. And sometimes there might be a very big pout, like, I don't want to refine. Me, mine. And there's where the trouble starts. Pouting is like a protest. Wisdom would have to monitor what is appropriate. If you see a fire, you don't just sit there and say, well, I'll just be patient with the fire. But you put out the fire. Fit the circumstances. What's patient for you might not be patient for me. There might be exalted patience where you can tolerate really inappropriate behavior, like a Buddha. People would yell at him and he could sit there and take it and not react. But if you're a teacher in a schoolroom and a child is yelling at you, that's not appropriate. You should correct or restrain that child. So there are times when patience is appropriate and patience is not, and we must be wise and develop that quality of awareness, present moment awareness within you, and grow it more and more. And then with that awareness comes the development of metta, karuna, mudita, upeka, all those qualities that exalt the heart, because we can't think our way to enlightenment. We have to look in the heart, and the enlightenment will speak from within us. And when the mind is suffering, if you're really developing wisdom and mindfulness, you will see, oh, this leads to suffering, it doesn't lead to peace. Then you'll know in yourself, come back to what's the state of the mind that backed up that kind of action, and the result was this. But just to think it through, you know, we have all the things we've learned, the Eightfold Noble Path, the Seven Factors of Enlightenment, all the Bodhipakya Dhammas. You can't memorize it. You have to live your way into it. Use the
Yes.
Noble Eightfold Path, the noble qualities, and you'll see that Kanti, patience, is right in there. You can combine all of them. It's not linear. These lists, sometimes you'll pick up these noble qualities, the 10 paramis, in one handful, because they all support each other. As soon as you have sati, you'll start to have patience, and patience is love and having a mind that you pacify so that you give up what supports self so that you can be kind to someone else. There's the metta. It's like knitting. That's why I like crochet and knitting, because one stitch and one stitch upon another leads to a garment that you can wear. So if you want to wear the dress or be clothed in the skin of enlightenment, you have to open your heart into it. It's not something outside of you, it's something within you. It's like an inner, internal Red Cross dressing, patching, sewing together what has been torn apart by our delusion. Delusion is expensive. It tears our noble kernel apart. It crushes. It impacts and destroys the goodness. It doesn't destroy the goodness. It destroys the skill of knowing that goodness. So that our awareness is inclining towards Nibbana. So we have to be very careful to eradicate, without eradicating, just not enforcing, not reinforcing, not applying that delusion in daily life. Because people grow their delusion instead of nourishing the seed of awakening, the flame of truth within us. Instead of allowing that to burn away delusion, we're allowing delusion to burn away our opportunity for awakening. So that which is deathless doesn't just endure, it just is imperishable. We're talking about a quality that is deathless. And that kind of unconditional love can endure anything. So really what we're here for is to come back to the silence where even those little minor protests or pouts can't arise anymore, because we redirect and refine again. We resort to patience. And of course, patience is love. It's the highest love. It's the love of the awakened heart, which doesn't mind or choose anything other than what it truly is.